Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Jonah, how's it going? How was your weekend?
It was good. Last weekend before we get actual football practices. We get to talk about real football now. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're, three Saturdays away from week zero? So we're very close. We're awfully close. This is going to be great.
Yeah, it creeps up on you.
Yes, for sure. Now, let me ask you this, because you wrote a story today about this in the Commercial Appeal. First day for Ed Scott on the new job. And you gave him five things he needs to address right away. First of which is going to be the Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, raising $25 million more dollars. What can you tell me about that project, what it's going to look like, and how close they are to securing that, and what the timeline should be?
Yeah, so the thing was, I wrote that a couple weeks ago. I tweeted it out today because today's obviously his first day, and a lot has changed even in the last couple weeks, right? So, like, you talk about fundraising, there's been a lot of departures from the athletic department in those last couple weeks. And a lot of those people, obviously, Jeff Crane, who left for South Carolina, was instrumental in that stadium deal. And a lot of the fundraising that went into it. And so now replacing him and replacing a lot of those people kind of moves up on the list, because you need those people and that infrastructure in there to start that fundraising. And then you got to get that $25 million. Now, they did pretty well getting the first $25 million. Part of that was there was obviously a lot of enthusiasm when the FedEx deal was announced. There was a lot of enthusiasm back when the stadium deal was announced with what Fred Smith was doing. And so you always get a jump right after those deals are announced when you're trying to match a certain amount of money. And now you get into we need to contact people who haven't donated yet. And if they were obviously really wanted to, they probably would have done it in the first place. So this is kind of the home stretch where it gets more difficult. And Ed Scott obviously knows that, and he's coming into a situation where he's got to fundraise really quickly. But he's obviously, one of the reasons that they hired him was because of his fundraising ability that he showed in the past at his past couple jobs. And so I'm sure he's got ideas about how to do it. But yeah, for sure, that's one of the things that he's got to think about right from the jump.
Now, with all of the departures in the athletic staff, like what can you tell me about that? I mean, it's anything to worry about, or is it just, hey, Laird left, so a lot of people followed him, and other people just departed because it's a changing of the guard?
Yeah, I think it looks a lot worse than it actually is, because people assume, somebody came in and now six or seven people are just suddenly out. The reality is, like, Laird Veach went to Missouri. He was always, like any person is, he's going to try to take some of his people so he has people around him he can trust. Now, it took a second at Mizzou for him to kind of figure out how that athletic department was organized and see what options and opportunities there were in terms of how many people he could bring in. Then he decided to bring them in. Now, those people leaving, it's not a slight to Memphis. It's just, you know, they're going to a SEC school and they're going to work for somebody that's familiar to them, and it makes total sense. And then other ones, Jeff Crane, obviously, another unique situation where he obviously wasn't looking to leave. We know that because he wanted the full-time job as athletic director. But obviously when he doesn't get it, ends up going to South Carolina, which, again, an SEC school, and he's going to be a deputy athletic director there. So I think a lot of these situations are specific things, obviously. Like Scott Burns, who was the football SID, right. He goes to Florida, another SEC school. So it makes sense. And again, in a vacuum, it looks like, well, we should be worried. All these people are leaving. Then when you look at it individually, I think it's pretty clear that these were unique situations, and it's not something of everybody's trying to get out right now.
Now, you said the second thing here for Ed Scott to figure out day one or in the first few months of his tenure here. You said sort out Memphis's place in conference realignment talks. Is that something that he can really sort out, or is that just sort of what we always talk about? I know it's cliche, I know it's boring, but control what you can control and then move forward from there. It doesn't feel like any AD really has the full power to, you know, make that happen. It feels like as an athletic department, you just have to show the work.
You got to show the work. I think you also just have to be ready, because it could happen at any time. And you have to be ready to answer the call and ready to make sure that you're positioned. That's a lot of what Memphis has been doing over the past couple of years. It's trying to position itself whenever the call comes to be ready and have the facilities and the resources to say, we should be considered on this level. We should be in a power conference. Now, again, it's all very specific, and SMU was able to kind of engineer a situation where they were able to get into another conference without any real, like, there wasn't a lot coming before that. They just kind of came up with the money and they were able to do it. And obviously last summer was crazy with conference realignment, and hasn't been like that so far this summer. And again, knock on wood, because who knows, in an hour somebody could leave a conference, or FSU and Clemson could resolve those lawsuits and then suddenly, you know, watch out. So it's definitely not a thing where he can just snap his fingers and get Memphis in another conference, which if he could, he would have done it the first time he walked in the door. So I think that he's got a lot to kind of sort through, but that's one of those things. And we're going to obviously constantly be asking him about it. And he talked about it at his introductory press conference, so he's not going to be shy about it. And that's just something that's kind of it's going to be hanging over, I think, his whole tenure probably as AD.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, like most of the fan base, that's going to define his legacy here at Memphis. I know it's just starting, but I think his tenure is going to be defined. Can you get this program, this athletic department, where we have all wanted to go for a long, long time? It feels like the fan base is hanging their hat on that and seeing if Ed Scott can make it happen.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why he addressed it so openly in his introductory press conference. He knows people are going to look back on that and say, okay, what happened? And again, not totally in his control, but he knows that that's something that people are going to look back on, and it's going to be a defining, you know, kind of through line throughout his whole tenure here. And it's definitely going to be interesting to see where the next domino falls and then how Memphis can kind of sort through that.
What do you think makes sense, honestly? Like ACC, Big 12 feels like they're pretty good with their membership right now. What makes sense at this current moment?
Yeah. Well, you would have to say the ACC, it seems like what we're headed towards, and again, it always seems like we're heading towards something and then it goes somewhere else. But
right.
It seems like we're heading towards this situation where Clemson and Florida State and maybe a couple other schools get out of that grant of rights or are able to reach some kind of settlement and get out of the conference. Now, obviously, it starts with where are they going to go? Because there was talk in the past about the ACC, those schools creating their own conference, basically, in which case then you're just kind of throwing everything into chaos. The kind of cleanest thing for Memphis, you would have to say, is that those two schools leave and then they're, okay, we need to recruit two or more schools to replace them. And you look at Memphis, probably now if the ACC is looking and saying we need to recruit schools from non-power conference, like from non-power conference level, like probably Memphis is up there.
Yep.
Obviously, Memphis thought that it was last time, so you can't really be sure because you never really know how other people are going to operate and what they're looking at specifically. But given what Memphis has done both on and off the football field, because we know that all of this comes down to football, right? We talk about other sports, talk about basketball, and certainly basketball. Memphis is huge, but conference realignment is all about football. And Memphis has been able to renovate the football stadium. We're pushing this forward. And then the success on the football field, when you go back really over the last 10 years, has been really, it's been amazing relative to Memphis's history in football. And that's one of the things that probably held it back in the past. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the best case scenario, right? Like realistic scenario, but it all kind of depends on other things. And again, it goes back to Memphis not really having control over how this all plays out.
Now, one of the things though, I can't shake, like the concerns I can't shake, is if you know, the ACC loses some of its top membership, Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, Virginia, whoever it is, and Memphis ultimately gets into the ACC, there's some concerns in that in itself. I remember the Big East move turning into the AAC the first time around. In itself, when you look at that potential move, there's concerns with that as well. It doesn't mean you don't make that move, but if you throw the ACC into a situation where they are reeling and trying to add other schools, you put yourself in a very, very peculiar situation where you may not have the same access the ACC's are always sort of had atop, the Power Four, being in the Power Four.
Yeah, for sure. I think at that point, the ACC is probably behind the Big 12, right? And then you're looking at, someone is always trying to poach your schools, your best schools. So if you have someone that's doing really well, they might be going somewhere else. And again, it's just really crazy when you keep zooming out of all this stuff. It's just what conferences are going to exist in 5 years? Was the NCAA going to exist in 5 years? When is there going to be a union? We have this whole, this incredible moment on Friday with their signing this settlement, and it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And basically, though, and it is a huge deal, obviously, and we've talked about it before, but if there's a union and players become employees, then we're going to restart again. And if the NCAA collapses, we're going to restart again. And so, what even is a conference, and how much longer are those things going to exist in the sport? And that's why you got to, and that's why ADs, administrators, football coaches will tell you, we got to be where your feet are. You got to focus on the next game. And when you think about it in the context of how wild the whole ecosystem is, it definitely makes sense.
Now, the House versus NCAA settlement, all the terms were sort of published there by the NCAA on Friday, I believe. And we have heard Ed Scott say they're going to opt into revenue sharing here at the University of Memphis. Without that ACC money, without Power Four money, how does that look for the athletic department? How much of a chunk will that take out of their yearly revenue?
Yeah, it's a huge question. I mean, it's basically how much can you afford to give to players, and how much does that look like relative to the other schools in the conference, and how much does it look like? Because now you're competing recruiting-wise with schools that are just going to have more money because of the conference they're in. So I think potentially, there's a lot of reasons that people are doom and gloom about this for Memphis and for other non-Power 5 schools, and then there's reasons for optimism. Definitely one of the things to be concerned about is, recruiting-wise, you might suddenly be way behind other schools. You might need NIL stuff. You might need people to give more money to the athletic department. And then there's the other aspect, which is going to affect every school, of how are you going to manage this with scholarships for other teams, how are you going to manage it for Title IX stuff, even people who work in the athletic department, how many people do you need if there's less money available for them and for people coming in? So there's a lot to work through. I think the next thing is to see how the conference responds, right? Because we know that, as Scott, like you said Memphis is going to opt in. We haven't heard exactly how it's going to look with every other school in the conference. And then Tim Pernetti, when I spoke with him a few weeks ago, had kind of floated the idea of a conference cap or conference-specific rules on revenue sharing and on paying players to how much, to make sure that there's not gaps existing. Now, I know that Memphis fans are very unhappy about that. And I just want to make it clear that, and you saw what Tim Pernetti was saying at Media Days, he's the kind of guy, and I think he even said it, he's the kind of guy who just throws ideas out, and that's what he wants to do. And so that was not a direct plan or anything that's being set in motion. It was an idea. But it is something that he has to deal with now, of how are we going to manage this on a conference level, which is a whole other level of, regulation, and how you're going to make sure that things are somewhat even for the teams in your conference.
Yep. Talking with Jonah Dillon, at the Jonah Dillon on X Tiger Football and Grizzlies for the commercial appeal. Now, Tiger Football, we have practice in 2 days. 2 days until the first day of fall practice. No pads. It'll be just straight jerseys and everything else. So we're not going to see really anything until, the next week sort of passes and see sort of what happens, what the depth chart's going to look like. But what do you feel about this roster? Hard to feel bad about where this roster is at. And especially just, you look around the conference and how these things were voted upon at AAC Media Days. 23 of 30 first place votes goes to your University of Memphis Tigers.
Yeah, I think very clearly you can start with it's the most talented team in the conference. I don't think that's even really up for debate.
Yeah.
Somebody will come and tell me that, South Florida, look at their roster or whatever, but I think it's pretty clear. both in the players that are coming back from last year, which, again, that's the real thing that makes this team stand out among not just the AAC, but the group of five. There's really not a lot of schools in the country that are able to bring back their best players, because most of the time, if you're a really good player at a group of five team, you're going to be playing at a power conference level the next season, because there's just going to be more opportunity there. So that's where it starts. Obviously, the transfer portal, Memphis did pretty well. It starts with, you know, the winter, Mario Anderson, guys like that. And then the spring, kind of post-FedEx deal, you get guys like Elijah Herring, Kobe Miner. And now you're filling specific holes that existed in the roster. Like, you needed a linebacker because of the injury to Javonte Mackey, who was another transfer. Elijah Herring comes in, needed cornerback help badly. Kobe Miner comes in, obviously needed a running back to replace Blake Watson, and Mario Anderson comes in. So I think that the roster looks like it's in a really good position, again, especially relative to the conference. And now it's kind of down to, okay, you've done it in recruiting, but as Ryan Suickfield will tell you, it doesn't matter. Once you get on the field, it doesn't matter how many four-star recruits or how much money you had to give to guys. You got to go out there and you got to earn it.
Yep, 100%. Now, I know this is a basic question that everyone asks, but when you talk about concerns on this team, I think you look at offensive line and secondary. Offensive line, you hear Ryan talk through it. He says, oh, I feel great about it. You know, the depth is better than I've ever had here at the University of Memphis. Secondary is always going to be a question, though, or at least a concern. Where do you put those two position groups in? What category, question or concern?
Yeah, secondary, I think, concern. The team had a lot of defensive issues last season, and secondary was obviously one of them, and a lot of guys are gone now. So on one hand, like, it's exciting for fans because, okay, we brought in all these new guys, and maybe they're better than the guys we had last year. On the other hand, like, a lot of guys are untested or haven't really played at this level, and we're going to have to see how they do. And there's been a lot of talk. Obviously, like I said, Kobe Miner at cornerback is a guy who's penciled in probably to be a starter, but on the other side, you've got guys who've been in the program, DJ Bell, Julian Barnett, Davion Roth, and you would hope that one of those guys kind of stands out. Julian Barnett was getting rave reviews from coaches in the spring, yep. So that's one that they're excited about. But you need guys to step up, and I have a story that'll come out tomorrow. Basically, like, that's one of the positions where it feels like there are spots up for grabs, whereas on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of, you know, we have a pretty good idea of who's going to start and who's going to be a depth piece and where that's all going to play out. Defensively, if you look at the secondary and you look at the defensive line, like, there are spots up for grabs if somebody plays really well and can kind of prove themselves during this period before the season starts. And so that's definitely one to watch. And I think the secondary is going to be something we're going to be talking about probably throughout the season.
Yeah, and here's the thing I keep saying about the defense when people ask me about it. I think the run defense is going to take care of itself for the most part. Obviously, injuries could change that, but they have two really big D tackles, one of them being P.J. Lucas they got from Indiana, who's, what, 6'2", 330 pounds, two-gapper, should be able to stop the run. Cormonte Hamilton up there as a fifth-year guy, being one of their defensive ends. Their linebackers, Chandler Martin, first-team All-AAC, Elijah Herring, the leading tackler with the Vols last year with Tennessee. I feel good about that run defense. And then, you know, to add on top of that, Jordan Hankins, we saw what he does with his run defense in the bowl game against Iowa State. They gave up 0 yards, and even heading into that game, Iowa State's running back had a couple of 200-yard games. He looked phenomenal. So I think the run defense is going to be taken care of, but I keep telling people, don't lose sight. As well as they played defensively in that bowl game, they gave up 440 yards to a freshman quarterback in Rocco Beck.
Yeah, and I think it starts also, one of those things that we kind of noticed last year, you mentioned the run defense, and I agree, but I think pass rushing is potentially an area of concern. Like, who's gonna get to the quarterback, right? Like, Reggie Grimes comes in from Oklahoma. That's somebody that they're excited about. And again, another one of those positions where if somebody comes in during summer practices and plays really well, they could get on the field, because that was another thing last year. If you're not getting pressure on the quarterback, you're asking your defensive backfield to work a lot harder and longer, and guys are just going to get open. And we saw kind of gaps just opening up throughout the season in the secondary. And so that's the thing. It starts there. Like you said, linebacker is not an area of concern. It's one of the top areas of strength on the entire team, obviously. And that's going to plug holes. Like, that's important to know, too. Like, Chandler Martin and Elijah Herring are going to plug holes that exist. But you've got to find somebody to rush the passer, and then you've got to find people in the secondary who can play consistently and make sure that those gaps just aren't there anymore. So, yeah, to me, like, that's where it is. Obviously, offensive line, like you said, just because there's going to be so many new players and because there's going to be a new starter at every position with some guys moving around, it might take some time to kind of sort that out. But there are definitely options there, and there are bodies who you'd be excited about and feel pretty confident in are going to be able to do it.
I know we don't have a bunch of concerns on the offensive side of the ball with all the continuity. I guess you could worry or question what the offensive line is going to look like, but what's your confidence level that the offense looks as balanced as it did a year ago with Blake Watson? I understand the running back room is replenished with Mario Anderson Jr., Sutton Smith, sort of thunder and lightning duo there. But we look at Seth Hennigan. His first 2 years didn't have a lot of balance, and his stats were good, but they weren't as good as they were a year ago when he had that 1,000-yard rusher. What's your confidence level this balance is going to be very, very nice between run and pass?
It has to be high, obviously, because of what Mario Anderson did at South Carolina. But at the same time, I think that we lose sight of Blake Watson, what he did last season, because he was so consistent throughout the year in what he was able to do. But it's not easy to rush for 1,000 yards. Mario Anderson played really well last year. He didn't rush for 1,000 yards, obviously, against a different level of competition. So he's coming in. He's saying all the right things. He told our intern, Josh Carver, he wants to break D'Angelo Williams' record.
Well, I saw that. That's
that would certainly
all
help.
Right, buddy.
That would certainly help.
that's a hell of a goal to set, though. I can say that.
Anytime you're talking about D'Angelo Williams, that would be great. Obviously, he doesn't need to do that in order to have a successful season, but it makes sense. People are excited about him. Sutton Smith is a guy I think that's going to be another storyline throughout summer practices, is like, how is he going to be utilized? Because it was kind of last season we talked about, what's his role going to be? Is he going to have a breakout season? How are they going to use him in maybe non-traditional ways? And it just honestly didn't happen. Like, he flashes potential that, frankly, nobody else on the team does sometimes with plays that he makes. But at the same time, like, he hasn't done it consistently, and he hasn't played the amount that we have expected him to. And so that's going to be another thing to kind of watch throughout this time, and how is he going to play with Mario Anderson. So that's I wouldn't say it's a concern, because it's like you've got another running back behind your starter who we think could be really good. But it's something to watch as they kind of figure this whole thing out. And then the only other thing I would say is there's definitely spots up for grabs behind the top three receivers. So who's going to stand out? They've got a couple guys coming in, obviously, as transfers. And then they've got Keyondre Henry as a true freshman. We'll get to see him for the first time. And so that's another one where if somebody does get injured, who's going to step up? And that's a way to figure it out, is during fall practices.
Yeah. Now, final couple of things with your Grizzlies coverage in general. I saw your colleague, we had Jason Munns put this out there earlier today. Luke Kennard is expected to play in the Danny Thomas Celebrity Pro-Am in a couple of weeks before the big golf tournament. What in the hell is going on with that? I mean, what have you heard? How long is this going to take? I mean, last week we were saying, okay, is this going to happen, this Saturday or after this Saturday? Most people said, okay, I think, with the waning few days of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they figured it was going to happen at that point. But it still hasn't happened. Are they still trying to make moves behind the scenes before they move Luke Kennard, or is it just strictly back and forth negotiations holding this thing up?
It's a really weird one, because, like you said, we've been expecting, I feel like, every day since free agency started that, okay, today's going to be the day. The only thing I can think is, like, it's been a really weird offseason once you got past the first couple of days of free agency. And the best example is what happened with Tyus Jones, obviously, because Grizzlies fans know, like, Tyus Jones, everybody loves Tyus Jones. They think of him as either he's the best backup point guard in the league, or he can spot start, as he obviously did for John Morant when Ja was hurt. And as somebody who's like gotten a significant amount of money, and you would expect if he's a starting caliber point guard, you're going to be able to get mid-level exemption or more. And for whatever reason, he's sitting there throughout the beginning of free agency and they have to sign a minimum contract, which I assume once he was going to sign a minimum contract, he had 30 teams calling him saying,
yeah,
sign a minimum contract with us. So I guess that's, and when you look at it, that's kind of, there's all these things that happen when you get a new CBA, and people don't realize what's going to happen until they see it play out. And so one of the things is guys like that just getting totally squeezed. And so now Luke Kennard, if Tyus Jones could get any money, like, there's just not a lot of teams that are able to sign anybody to any non-minimum contract or any contract period, because a lot of teams are close to their roster limit now. And so Luke Kennard, based on not signing in the first couple of days when the money was available, now is in a situation where obviously the Grizzlies can bring him back, but he's just lost so much leverage in a situation like you saw with Tyus Jones, just kind of proves it. And so I think it probably gets to a point where they're both expecting that he's going to come back, but that number might keep coming down because the Grizzlies are realizing that that's just the reality of the business at this time. And yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. Now he's on the, we'll see him at the golf tournament. Maybe he'll still be unsigned by then and we can ask him about it. But yeah, it's a really weird kind of subplot throughout this offseason.
Well, it feels like he's going to sign back with the Grizzlies. It's just a matter of when and what that damn contract's going to look like. But I know you talk about the CBA and what it looked like, Tyus Jones only getting a minimum deal, $3.3 million over a year, and it feels like we're getting rid of the middle class, really. The middle class is dying right in the NBA. But at the same time, I look at like a guy like Sam Hauser, who plays a very similar role that Luke Kennard plays for the Grizzlies, but on the Celtics, the reigning NBA champions. He got, what, 4 years, $45 million? So on the other hand, it looks like he could talk himself up in those contracts to be able to get that type of money, or at least close.
Yeah, but the thing is also, because of the way it's always, this isn't new in the CBA, but you can always sign your own free agents and give them more money. So if you're the Celtics, if they were to lose Sam Hauser, there's no way they could replace him with any non-minimum contract, right? So they almost, and it's the same.
And they're already over the second apron, so they don't really care probably that much.
Right, so now they're just like, this is the situation we're in. Whereas the Grizzlies are probably saying, okay, we want Luke Kennard back. And we now look around the NBA and we see what's happening with other guys. And he doesn't have any other options for any significant money. And so we can just keep offering him. I'm not saying this is happening, but you kind of look at it and it's like, they can either say this is our offer and not even take it or leave it, just you're going to take it eventually, or it's going down or it's going up. And that's just kind of the situation with, you end up with free agency where, like, if you don't sign right away, the team that you're with can pay you more. So they're always going to be your best option, but it's not a lot out there besides them.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I hear that. Now, final thing, Ja Morant got inducted to the Murray State Hall of Fame this weekend. A lot of his message, though, I found kind of refreshing. It was, you know, I'm glad that everyone here, even the Grizzlies, you fans at Murray State, have stood by me, even though I've had a couple of missteps in these past couple of seasons. Like, that's a refreshing message coming from a guy like that. And it does show some growth.
Yeah, I feel like openly talking about it definitely does, because a lot of times in the past you saw kind of like, let's move on, let's talk about basketball. And it wasn't even like someone was out there asking him a question. It wasn't like it was a media thing. Like, he went out there and he owned it. And all those people out there who were there to support him obviously appreciated it. And I think, you know, you're seeing a lot, because it's always like that when someone's injured and they don't play the whole season. Obviously, they kind of move to the background, as Grizzlies fans were lamenting in the playoffs. Like, you guys aren't talking about Ja. You're not talking about Ja. And it wasn't just the playoffs, because he was hurt so much in the year. A, he's not playing. B, he's not talking. And so now he's kind of back at the forefront, and obviously will continue to be going into next season. And we'll see. Maybe it's the new and improved Ja Morant. You know, you never know. But it was definitely a cool moment for him to get inducted there. And campaign Isaiah Cannon.
Yep.
Isaiah Cannon was as one of those college basketball guys you remember watching, and then you forgot about him. You're like, yeah, Isaiah Cannon, he was really good in college. So that was my takeaway. I don't know if that was what I was supposed to think, but yeah.
Yeah, but there was two ways this could have gone. Like, and I think Ja Morant has taken the good side of this thing. One, you admit your faults and you move forward and you try to be better. The other part of this, though, there's been guys in the past who, like, let's be honest, Ja Morant didn't get any type of criminal charge by any stretch of the imagination. He didn't do anything with a whole bunch of criminality. I know they had the investigation into the gun in a nightclub in Denver, and that ended up with somebody else, and nobody got charged for that. But he could have felt like a victim through this whole thing. He did get a pretty heavy-handed punishment in the end of the day for a guy who didn't face any criminal charges.
Yeah, which is why it kind of makes sense at this point, now that we're pretty insulated from this, especially with what happened last season with the injury and not playing basically at all, that at this point, when you're going into this season, the message can become like, okay, this is in the past, let's just move on, instead of continuing to...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You know, as fans obviously do to harp on, why did this happen? Why did this happen? It kind of makes sense for him and for the Grizzlies at this point to say, like, okay, we understand things happened in the past. There were mistakes made. Let's just move forward now and just kind of have it be behind us. And yeah. So it seems like that was kind of the approach, which, like I said, I think that makes sense at this point. Like, let's just move forward and let's talk about basketball instead of all this other stuff, which is really dominated the Grizzlies for more than a year. It's basically what the story has been.
And derailed the Grizzlies in a lot of ways last year. But hopefully better times are on the horizon. We'll see. Hopefully Luke Kennard gets signed by, you know, the end of the week. Hopefully. We'll keep an eye on it.
I'll see you in a month when you say that again.
I hope this doesn't drag out another month. But Jonah, I appreciate the heck out of it. We'll do this again soon.
All right, appreciate you.
Yes, sir. That's Jonah Dillon at the Jonah Dillon on X, Tiger Football and Grizzlies for the commercial appeal. He does a heck of a job at both. Now, know who else does a heck of a job of giving you deals all the time? That's Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's the last week of the Summer of 1,000 Engagements. All this week through Saturday, a wedding band expo. Here are some of the deals. Buy one wedding band and get a second wedding band half off. You have 0% down, 0% interest for 12 months. You can get a free silicone band with men's band purchase. You get the free vacation as well for two, starting at if you spend $24.95 or more. And you can get Vegas, Fort Lauderdale, Miami. You can get a three-night resort stay in the Caribbean. You can take a Carnival cruise. They try to hook you up. They do whatever they can to try to make it great on you when you go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. And there's no stress with a meant-to-be guarantee. Meant-to-be guarantee, you buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You have 365 days to return it, no questions asked. Again, choices in every single budget. Natural-grown diamonds, lab-grown diamonds, you have options. It's not just engagement rings. You can get anniversary rings, birthday rings, wedding bands. I got the job. Men's and women's styles are available. But remember, the Summer of 1,000 Engagements and free Sunny Summer giveaway this Saturday. Everyone deserves beautiful jewelry, and everyone deserves a free vacation, and Robert Irwin Jewelers understands that. They have 5 locations in Memphis and Little Rock, or you can go online at rijewelers.com. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, Robert Irwin Jewelers, or online at rijewelers.com. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we'll come back with a little thing that we do every day. It's called...
Now, the biggest stories.
Overloading the line.
A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And always remember that the Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, let's hop into it.
Jordan Love got paid 4 years, $220 million. He is now in a tie as the highest paid QB in NFL history with an average per year of $55 million. Also, he gets $155 million guaranteed, and he set an NFL record with a $75 million signing bonus. Is this contract worth it?
No. Simply put, no. Is it worth it for Jordan Love? Absolutely. Is it worth it to keep hope in the eyes of the Packers fans? Absolutely. But is it worth it on its laurels? Absolutely not. Do we realize, who the ninth highest paid annual quarterback is annually?
Is it Patrick Mahomes?
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
You know, the top eight, you have Love, Lawrence, Burrow, Tua, Goff, Herbert, Lamar, Hurts. Combined playoff records, 16-17. And you know how many Super Bowls they've won? A combined 0. That's 8 quarterbacks. So just on the surface, none of these contracts are worth it. I'm not saying Love didn't you know, get what he was supposed to get based on the market. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is all of these quarterback contracts are just generally, when you look at the numbers and success that follows, not worth it. Again, 16 and 17 are the top eight annually paid quarterbacks in the NFL, 16 of 17, or 16 and 17 in the playoffs, zero Super Bowls, all combined for eight quarterbacks. So no, but he did get paid what he had earned based on the market, and I have no problem with the Packers going ahead and doing this. But I think all of these contracts, when you just look at them for what they are, they're all risky. Now, I think there are some that are riskier than others, and I really want to get into that conversation. I think, actually, Jordan Love's at the bottom of riskiest, because I think what he's done with Romeo Doubs and freaking Christian Watson, guys like that, that's impressive as hell, right? You know, I think the Madden ratings came out today, and his top-rated wide receiver is Romeo Doubs. He's a 79 overall. I think that's pretty fair. So I think he's at the sort of bottom of these risky contracts. I think the riskiest ones you look at are Trevor Lawrence, who gets the same amount of per-year salary as Jordan Love, really has had one playoff win, so the same amount of playoff success, but fell off a cliff last year after getting the contract. And then you look at him, like, he had more help at the wide receiver position than Jordan Love did a year ago, and he couldn't do anything with it, really. He was very average. And here's the other part of it. You know how much guaranteed money he has? More than Jordan Love. He has $200 million guaranteed on his contract.
That's
even,
a lot.
That's even more. Or that's second, I believe, in the history of the NFL, behind Deshaun Watson, who has $230 million. Now, if I was being honest about the most risky contract, it's Deshaun Watson, but we've known that for a long time. And then the other one that I think is relatively risky is Jared Goff. I know that he has a lot around him, so it's not always going to be on his shoulders, but $53 million per, $175 million guaranteed to him. He's getting up there in age. He's about to cross the 30 plateau. And what have we seen from him in the past with the Rams? Yeah, he's been to a Super Bowl. He's only won, besides Joe Burrow, in this top eight that has made a Super Bowl. But what happened when he got to that Super Bowl? He was asked to go win the game. He couldn't do it. Final score was, what, 13-3? So I think those are the two riskiest ones. I think they're all risky in their own right, just because of the way the market's been set. But I it's a strange day we live in. It really is. All these quarterbacks, regardless of how good they have actually been, reset the market, no matter if somebody that's better than them is getting paid less. Patrick Mahomes is ninth right now on this list. If Dak Prescott has a good prove-it year, guess what? He's going to reset the market. He might get $60 million per for the next 3 to 4 years. That is insane to think about. A guy that has not had a tremendous amount of playoff success, a guy who's never been to a Super Bowl, getting that type of money. That is normalized in today's society. So going back to that original, you know, question, of is it worth it to pay these quarterbacks this? Unless your name's Patrick Mahomes, no, it's not. But it's just the way of the world.
I got two questions for you. One is about Joe Burrow. On a risk scale of 1 to 10, where do you think his risk falls? And number two, what did you make of Patrick Mahomes saying that he doesn't feel like he's underpaid?
I think Joe Burrow is about a 6, but I think that's normal, where the other guys are like 9s or 10s.
I think Burrow's different because we know he can do it. It's really just about his health.
Yes, it's about the health, which is a risk in its own right.
Right.
But
it's a different type of risk.
There was in no world where, like, Joe Burrow was not worth that. I question if other guys are worth that. So about a 6. The other question about Patrick Mahomes saying he doesn't feel underpaid. He is compared to the market, but I mean, can we really think about this as a human being and not, like, athlete brain for a second?
$200 million, he's fine.
$500 million is his entire contract valuation. He makes $50 million per.
Right.
In what world is that, like, not good enough? I guess in this world it's not good enough. But for him, the best quarterbacks that have won the most Super Bowls in NFL history have made some concessions on their contract. The most recent one, who won 6 with the Patriots and then 1 with the Bucks, is Tom Brady. He made concessions with every contract he ever took because he wanted to surround himself with the most talent. Patrick Mahomes, it has a chance to do that. I wonder if they'll restructure it going into the future, but I like the attitude he has, because the attitude he has is, brother, I make $50 million per and I get to win Super Bowls. There are worse things in the world. If I make $65 million per, we may not be able to win Super Bowls at the same rate that we're winning. We may not have a chance to three-peat. So I like where his mindset is. Is he underpaid compared to the market? Yes. But compared to real life, he is grossly overpaid. And I think he understands that, and I think he has a good perspective on it.
You know, I would be curious, if we went through all of the major sports, is the best player the highest paid player in any of the major sports?
Mm. Shohei is probably the best player. He's the highest paid. So we'll start with the MLB. Yes, that's a check mark. NFL, no, because he signed a 10-year deal. If he would have signed a shorter deal, he would have eventually been the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. I'm sure of that. But no. NHL, I don't know what Connor McDavid
makes. No idea.
But I would imagine it's up there with the top. I don't know if it is the top, but it's pretty close.
NBA, yeah. No.
NBA, Jokic, not yet, but I don't know when his contract runs out. He will be. But like these, a lot of these major sports, the market will dictate what you're getting paid. And especially in the NBA, you're going to get a supermax or a max extension. You're just dictating it. I do wonder what Jokic is going to think next time around. I'm sure he's going to want to take all the money, but at the same time, he likes it in Denver. He's treated like a god there, and he has seen over the past 2 years since they won the NBA championship, all of his good players, good role players, have been taken away from him because there's a lot more money they're spending on that roster, and they don't want to, you know, pay Kentavious Caldwell-Pope $20 million a year because they have a high-paid roster already. So I wonder how it's going to go, but we have seen historically some of the best players taking pay cuts is always good. Always good. It always goes a long way to going and winning championships. And Patrick Mahomes, it's not like he took a pay cut, but he signed a contract really early, and he's living by that contract.
Horse care is expensive.
Yes.
Horse care is expensive. Yes. So really, it's before Shohei, it would have been possibly none of the major sports their highest paid player.
Yes, and it's all in the eye of the beholder, and we're getting into a little semantics, like who's the best player.
I mean, I feel like it's kind of definitive, though. I mean, and most you can say that's the best guy. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, I agree. But in the NFL, it's just the market is so diluted. It's so diluted, especially the quarterback position.
Moving on to someone in the NBA who definitely is not the highest paid player. Tyus Jones signed a 1-year, $3.3 million deal with the Suns. He will play alongside the most notable big three in the league, KD, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal.
Thank you, Matt Ishbia, for not being a complete moron this offseason. Thank you for not standing by what you said as the season ended last year.
We don't need a point guard.
We don't need a point guard. We want the ball in the hands of these guys at all times. Thank you for not standing by that. Because you need a point guard. A good point guard like Tyus Jones, who leads NBA history in assist-to-turnover ratio, guess what? He can set up your offense really well, and he can get the ball in the hands of all of your good playmakers. So there's that first. And then my second thought on this. Man, I'm happy for Tyus Jones. I really am. I know that he didn't get paid a lot, but this is a great situation for him. And I would imagine he'll play well. Because he normally does, especially with all of this talent around him, with KD, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. And I'd imagine going into next offseason, he may drive his price up. But for him to be into outside of the Grizzlies, another playoff championship situation, I feel good for him in that regard. He has a chance to make a very real impact on a team that needs a guy like him. I thought he was the perfect pickup for the Suns. They got him for the perfect price. I think this is a great match for both parties.
Yeah, they nailed it. They nailed it, and especially getting him at the contract that they did. Do you think it pushes the Suns into actual contention, or do you still think
they're outside of it? Way more than I thought. No, it's crazy. Most people would look at a signing like Tyus Jones and be like, oh, how much does that actually mean? But we've seen him play, and we know the impact he can make on the offensive end and setting up some great players. So I think this puts me way higher on the Suns than I was, you know, a couple of days ago when they didn't have Tyus Jones. I'm not going to sit here and say they're going to win an NBA championship, but this put them a actual step closer to going and being able to make that an aspiration, a real aspiration.
Hot take, having an actual NBA point guard makes your team better.
Even if it's not, like, the biggest name in the world. Even if it's not a guy who can put up 20 points per game. Even if it's not a star.
You just need somebody that can run an offense.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not some, like, super splashy move. But if you know basketball, you know this will make the Suns a substantially better basketball team going into next year.
Yeah.
And an actual threat, scary threat in the West if all goes to plan.
It makes their offense better. I still have questions about defense.
Yeah, I still have questions about defense. And we do have questions about Tyus playing in the playoffs because that's sort of natural. But, I mean, you pair Tyus with two of the best scorers in the NBA.
Then Bradley Beal.
I like that. I cannot hate on that. And I wonder, okay, bear with me here. Before last year, Bradley Beal was being touted as, oh, this is a guy we're going to put the ball in the hands of, and he's going to be our point guard. Like, that's the way we're going to go about these things. You think Bradley Beal could be a little bit better treated now and, like, expend less energy, be more comfortable on a basketball floor than he was a year ago now that Tyus Jones there? I think maybe. I think that this could unlock a little bit more out of Bradley Beal, even though he's aging and definitely on a decline.
Yes. It's just going to come down to, can he actually move when he's out there? Because that back is not great.
Yes, I understand, but the back is bad.
But yes.
The back is bad, but when you put him on ball and ask him to do all these things in initiating offense, it makes that back a lot worse.
Yes. So it will free him up. I just don't know if it's going to be enough.
Okay. That's fair. I completely agree with that. I stand by that. But I do think there is a real possibility that Bradley Beal could be a way better basketball player than he was a year ago because he has Tyus Jones.
I floated they should bring him off the bench. Really take a load off.
That's an interesting thought.
Because he won't have to play defense against a starting two.
But who do you throw in the lineup that's not just a glaring hole?
I don't know. Is he not a hole? He feels
not like
a hole. Not like
some other options.
On the defensive end,
there.
They attack him.
I know, but like it's still Bradley Beal.
Sure, but with KD and Booker, your offense is going to be okay for the most part.
Sure.
I would just to maximize.
And Yusuf Nurkic. Don't forget about Yusuf Nurkic. Stop it.
Bite your tongue. I just have concerns about Beal wearing down if he's going to have to be a starter.
Okay. I think those are fair concerns. But I just think the options they're having to replace him in the starting lineup are just so limited. And also, I like Bradley Beal, St. Louis guy. Got to play him, see him play in high school at Chaminade, and I've always respected his game. I do wonder his mindset about coming off the bench. I don't know if he'd be. I think he'd be pretty prickly about that.
I mean, they got like Royce O'Neal.
Okay, I think he'd be pretty prickly about coming off the bench, though, don't you think?
I'd be like, Bradley Beal, we're paying you $50 million to barely play basketball. Sit your ass on the bench.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But ultimately, I think we both like the move.
Yeah,
we
for like sure.
Tyus
Absolutely
Jones
like the move. Yeah.
As a starting point guard for the Suns, setting up those three guys that they brought in over the years. But let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll come back and wrap up this Monday show with a rewind next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.